This is Cashing Out with your host, Dustin Sweetelson, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two here on Cashing Out. I am Doug Kazarian. Dustin back in the hot seat tomorrow and through the week. We are live here in downtown Las Vegas. I'm at the Circa Resort and Casino. You see the beautiful sports book behind me. It's very calm right now, but it was certainly rocking all throughout the weekend and unusually like active sports calendar with so much going on. In about 45 minutes, we're going to talk about more about baseball card for Monday and go into the props, a lot of pitcher props, things like that. Logan Windsor is going to join us, a guy I really respect and bounce a lot of ideas off of because he does a lot of the math approach, and he is based in the state of Wisconsin, as is our next guest. So it's the Wisconsin Hour, number two here on Cashing Out. And so let's bring in Nick Whalen, who does an awesome job throughout the week here on VSiN for Prop Points. He's a co-host. He's also senior analyst for RotoWire. So Nick joins us now via the Progressive guest line. Nick, good to be with you. I know we hung out in person here at this beautiful resort, Circa, but good to be connected here on VSiN. How's your weekend going?
Hey, no complaints, man. No complaints. My wife was actually out of town, so I was on baby duty, was able to, you know, offload the baby for a few hours yesterday, get a little golf in here as we enjoy the end of the summer in Wisconsin. But looking forward to, you know, really start to dive in on the NFL. I know we'll be talking a lot of football here, and I'll actually be out in Vegas at Circa for contest weekend in a couple of weeks. So looking forward to that as well.
That's awesome. So you couldn't take the baby golfing and, you know, obviously protect it with the sun and everything, but obviously kill two birds with one stone.
That negotiation has been, it's been entered with the wife. You know, the baby's still, she's only 9 months. Okay. So, you know, sitting up is kind of a new development, being out on the course in the sun for four and a half hours. It would be a lot to ask. I think at some point it's going to have to happen. It probably won't be until next summer, but I've lost the negotiation on that so far.
For now. Yeah. So far. Well said, because you got to chip away on that. Okay. Let's talk NFL futures. You have a lot of good ones here from a lot of, you know, different versions too. You got player props for the upcoming season, various outrights in terms of the to certain markets like index betting, and then also the conventional win totals. But there's a common theme here. I think the main one that stands out to me is you're very bullish on the Detroit Lions, and it's a chic pick. Obviously, they have a last place schedule. They're getting the band back together, but there's some concerns, at least I have, with Detroit with a high win total of 10.5. So it's not like I think they're going to miss the playoffs per se and be completely terrible or anything like that. Last year went off the rails. Why are you so bullish on the Lions to be not only over 10.5 wins, but the number one seed market and then also the coach of the year market with Dan Campbell?
Yeah, I will happily admit, Doug, that I'm probably overexposed on the Detroit Lions. Like you said, you can get them around 8-1 for the number one seed. I like them to win the division. I like them, of course, to go over the win total. And it, really, I am leaning into that schedule. You know, I think it can be a little bit dangerous in July and August to just pick through and say, oh, they're going to win that game. They're going to win that game. They're going to win that game. I know, you know, these teams are going to look a lot different by the time we get to October and November, but I think it kind of could be this year's version of what we saw with New England last year, where we had that same conversation and then the schedule did really end up propelling them throughout the season. Now, the big difference, of course, for Detroit is that, you know, their toughest games might all come within their own division. Like, there are no freebies against Green Bay, against Minnesota, and against the Chicago Bears. And I'm also high on this Vikings team. So maybe we'll get into, you know, a little bit later who I'm fading in the NFC North. But part of it is that I think looking at last year as kind of the year from hell for Detroit, right? It's really two straight years now where they've had a ton of injuries on both sides of the ball. The offensive line was very much up and down. So I would like to say that health luck, if that's what you want to call it, hopefully comes back around in 2026. But I'm mostly high on this offense. I mean, Gibbs, St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Sam Laporta, Jared Goff, who, by the way, leads the NFL in both yards and touchdowns over the last four seasons. I think it's about as good of a skill group as you're going to find anywhere in the NFL. And when you start to dig in on that schedule, four of their first five games come against the Saints, the Jets, the Panthers, and the Cardinals. I think they have a really good chance to get off to a hot start. And by virtue of somehow finishing last in that division last year, I mean, their non-rotation, non-divisional games come against Tennessee, the New York Giants, and the Arizona Cardinals. I know that Giants game could be tricky. That game's also at home. They get the Pats at home. They get the Bucks at home. You know, the only game I think you would look at right now and say, okay, they probably lose that, is at Buffalo early on. And they're only 3-point dogs in that game right now. I'm not totally sold on the latest version of the Bills.
Yeah, I wouldn't be automatically writing any game. I mean, they're good enough to beat any team anywhere. So, but I understand you have, they're not going to go 17-0. You have to kind of factor in some stuff. So the two concerns I have, one, you mentioned Goff and the production. I would say using the past 3 years, I think like some of those years, Ben Johnson was there, right? Now, with that being said, he had very strong production last year without Johnson, but Campbell had to step in and do play calling. I believe it's his fourth different play call in the last 4 years, something like that. Are you any element of concern here with Campbell calling plays if he's also the head? I'm not like big on his aptitude in that regard. Any concern? Because obviously the NFL is such a small margin for error, and that these are the difference makers, these types of things.
Yeah, I would say it's a plus, right? I mean, having to move on for Ben Johnson and, of course, him taking the Bears job, it's not like they chose that. You know, you knew there was going to be a step back. But I still thought, for the most part, the Lions offense looked like the Lions offense last year. And, you know, I think their OC last year was, what, Johnny Morton? I think I have that name correct. I mean, that clearly did not work like 8 games into the year. Campbell had to step in, like you said. And now they're bringing in Drew Petzing. So I kind of look at this as, it can't be as bad as it was with last year's OC, even if Dan Campbell is having maybe more of a footprint on this offense than you would like, you know, for a guy who, you know, feels, even though he played offense as a player, almost feels more like a defensive coach, like his personality style. He doesn't really strike you as one of these, you know, offensive minds who's at the top of the game. But I do think, you know, if you want to talk about Dan Campbell as coach of the year at 25-1, obviously that requires a lot of faith in the Detroit Lions winning as many games as I believe they can. But you know, this is a guy who was runner-up for Coach of the Year 2 years ago. He has another top three finish to his name. I do think his personality actually kind of helps him. If you're looking at the Coach of the Year market, I think he does stand out in that regard. But all of that said, your concerns are fair. You know, when you're cycling through offensive coordinators, that's rarely a good thing in the NFL. And, you know, ultimately, Detroit is a fairly top-heavy roster. I think there are still a lot of question marks about that defense and that secondary in particular.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think he moves the needle. It's kind of like when Trump first ran for president. He didn't pay for any advertising. He was just like the loudest guy, and he got free advertising being in the A block of every CNN segment. So, yeah, Dan Campbell, whether he intends to or not, he's shown on SportsCenter a bunch. And to your point, he's great for the locker room. He's a leader of men, all that good stuff. I don't love his decision-making at times. Might not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but he's, I think, an excellent head coach in that regard. I just wish he outsourced some of the sharp, you know, decision-making. Now, one concern I have, and this is why I would just say be careful. I'm not on the under, but Jared Goff cannot play outdoors. He just can't in cold weather. He's terrible. And they wrap up the season week 17 and 18, and so it's January at Chicago and at Green Bay. Now, week 18 may not matter, but it also could matter, and that's he did play at Green Bay a few years ago, and he was horrendous. And that was 2021, I think. And to the point where Chris Collinsworth, who compliments everyone, was like, Goff just doesn't have it tonight. Like, he's been awful. He's not even on target. Like, it's bad. So I would say your best case scenario for those final two games is 1-1. I would almost budget 0-2 just because they may not play week 18. So that wouldn't matter. But either way, I would not be optimistic there. So you're kind of having a condensed schedule if you need 11 wins and number one seed, things like that.
I think that's totally fair. Totally fair. And, you know, I think it was week one last year, right, where Jared Goff, even when it wasn't cold at Lambeau Field, struggled against the Green Bay Packers. Now, excuse me, I do think it was, what, 3 or 4 years ago, Rodgers' last game as a Packer, you know, Goff went in there and won what almost felt like a playoff game to knock Green Bay out. So I think your general point stands, but it makes it even more important for Detroit to take advantage of that schedule early in the season. When you open up with a very winnable game at home against the Saints, you know, can you go to Buffalo and get a win in week two in prime time? Then you have to take care of business against the Jets. You have to do the same against the Panthers and the Cardinals. So I think, yes, you worry about those last two games. You're also hoping you could get off to at least a 4-1, 3-2 as a worst case scenario, but 4-1, 5-0 to me is realistic through those first five games.
I couldn't agree more. I think they'll storm out of the great, especially out of the gates, especially because they'll be healthy and there won't be any like major concerns and injury. Yeah. I remember that Lions game. There's like Penei Sewell was getting the ball on fourth down and other guys were throwing it because there wasn't a drop off with Goff. But nonetheless, obviously, it's just something to keep in mind, at least now they play at Atlanta, at Miami in November. So those are obviously not going to be the elements. Let's keep in the division. You're bullish on the Vikings. I was sort of, but now I'm a little. Kyler Murray stinks. Like I was at, like not too long ago, like a month ago, I was like, 60-1 the MVP. I could sell that. Elsewhere and get out of my position a month into the season. Kevin O'Connell with a bad quarterback. Now I'm still worried. He's just so inaccurate. Try to convince me on this Vikings team.
So I'm not here to convince you that Kyler Murray is going to win MVP. I'm a lot more interested in like taking Kyler Murray at pick 120 in fantasy football than I am betting him for MVP. But my party line on this, Doug, all along, I've talked about the Vikings way too much on our show, is even if you're not a Kyler supporter, and I would say I am Kyler neutral. I'm not the biggest Kyler Murray fan, but the level of competency he is going to bring to this offense, even if there are some accuracy issues, even if he is a little bit of a tough guy to deal with, it's going to be a massive upgrade compared to not only J.J. McCarthy, who takes most of the heat, but Max Brosmer, Carson Wentz were starting games for this team last year. None of those guys were good. And somehow Minnesota still goes 9-8, despite some of the worst quarterback play in the league, bottom five in the NFL in offensive EPA, in passing yards, in first downs, in yards per attempt. They led the NFL in total turnovers. The lack of a passing game completely killed their rushing attack week to week. I'm actually high on Jordan Mason as a bargain running back in fantasy this year. And all of that thing, or all of those things happened, they still went 9-8. I have a ton of faith in KOC, at least getting the most out of Kyler Murray, even if that means he's like the 14th best quarterback in the NFL. That's significantly better than what the Vikings were dealing with last year. Obviously, the division will be tough. You know, the schedule is kind of middle of the road as far as where it stacks up in the NFL. But this is also a team that went 4-2 in division last year. They swept the Detroit Lions. They split with Chicago and Green Bay.
And they have Flores pulling the strings on defense, top seven defense, I think three straight years, and he's excellent. All right, I'm going to pick your brain also. We're going to go to the NFC North, South as well, because you're on the Saints. A lot of sharp guys are. I'm just not there yet. This is Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Rolling along here live in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. I am Doug Kazarian. Dustin back in the hot seat tomorrow and through the week. We're talking NFL. And we're looking at a lot of futures, having a good time with this. We've discussed the NFC North with the Lions and the Vikings. And let's get rejoined here with Nick Whalen of Prop Points, co-host during the week, also a senior analyst at RotoWire. He rejoins us via the Progressive guest line. All right, Nick, I want to talk the NFC South. I am fading the heck out of the Atlanta Falcons. I talked about it on Saturday night. I think the schedule is absolutely brutal. They face like a 10 or 11 playoff teams, I swear, which is who they drew. And it's also out of the division. Sometimes you just want the patsy of that division you're facing at home, because going on the road, they have to go to Cleveland in December. That's not an automatic win unless everyone thinks Cleveland's just going to go 0-17. I don't. Some of those games are hard, especially if it's tough weather. I mean, this is a team that just got smoked in Carolina last year. So on the road, they're a different team. I don't think Tua is good at all. He's one injury away or one hit away from retiring. Penix isn't all that, especially if he's not even healthy. I think Kevin Stefanski, yes, you could be an upgrade over Raheem Morris and that staff, but it doesn't mean you're necessarily this like savior. I thought what he did in Cleveland was pretty bad. Now, Miami last year with Mike McDaniel made lemonade out of lemons and did a lot of misdirection. I think McDaniel's a far better play caller than Stefanski. So I think he's got his work cut out for him. Yes, he has Bijan. Yes, he has Pitts, but I think this is a disaster. Under 7.5 wins for me with the Atlanta Falcons is my top win total of the season. But you are in the NFC South. You like what a lot of sharp guys are with the Saints to make some noise here with their win total over 7.5 wins.
I do. And first of all, I'm with you on Atlanta. You know, I think it's one of those teams that you look at some of the names in fantasy football. Everybody loves Bijan Robinson and you just think, oh, he's going to be the whole offense. He'll carry them. Drake London, one of the best wide receiver ones in the NFL. Right. That's kind of it. You know, I still need to see another year of Kyle Pitts performing like he did last season before we just start penciling that in as something we'll see annually. And I really, really worry about the quarterback situation for the Falcons. I am not a Tua guy whatsoever. Maybe he'll be better playing in a dome, but like you said, the schedule does not really do them any favors. So the NFC South in general, I think is going to look a lot like last season. You know, I've said on our show, I picked Tampa Bay to win the division. I don't think it's going to be convincing whatsoever. I think they'll probably back their way into 9, maybe 10 wins and probably lose in the wild card, and that'll be that. But I do like the Saints to go over 7.5 wins. I mean, this is a team that got to 6 a year ago, despite starting 1-8, switching quarterbacks midseason. They finally pulled the plug on Spencer Rattler. You look at that defense. It was very quietly a top 10 unit, despite being put in terrible situations week after week. They made some very necessary upgrades this offseason, bringing in Jordan Tyson with a top 10 pick, big upgrade at running back in Travis Etienne. You would hope the offensive line is better and healthier this year. I mean, this was the second worst rushing team in the NFL last year, behind only the Las Vegas Raiders, who were borderline historically bad as a running team. But I think so much of the attention down the stretch was focused on Tyler Shuck. We didn't really realize that he did not have any semblance of a running game. So I'm buying in on what we saw over the second half from the Saints. I really like Kellen Moore and the coaching staff. You hope you get a leap from Tyler Shuck in year two. He actually gets to prepare as a starter this offseason, which I think helps. So I'm not going as far as to say, you know, Saints are winning 10 games, they're winning the division, but I think they're the second place team to me in the NFC South.
Now, this reminds me of the around 2000 when Phil Mickelson famously bet on the Ravens to win it all. I was also a wagerer on the Ravens back then. It's because they finished the second half of the season like 8-1 the previous year or something like that. Is it as simple as the Saints now have their quarterback, like you said, a full offseason for Tyler Shuck to just evolve with a seemingly great head coach and play caller in Kellen Moore and adding the right pieces? I mean, heck, they still have Kamara, Olave, until he may get hurt again, sadly, but that's been his track record. I mean, is it as simple as they started last year 1-8 with a bad quarterback, they made a switch, and now they're a good team? Is it as simple as that?
Well, I don't even know if I would say for sure they're a good team, but I think they will be a league average type of team, you know, which is really what they were down the stretch. It's not like they were beating down other opponents. And, you know, having six games on your schedule in your own division where I think they could go 4-2, maybe 5-1 helps a ton. They get the Raiders at home early in the season. They do have two very tough games coming out of the gate, which worries me a bit for that win total. So maybe this is one that you wait. If you like the Saints like I do, I think they probably lose on the road at Detroit in week one. They have to go to Baltimore in week two. So maybe, you know, heading into that Raiders game in week three is when you make a play on an updated number. But overall, like you said, I really trust Kellen Moore. I think he's probably the best coach to me on paper in the division, even after just 1 year. But the overarching theme here is that the bar is just not that high to clear in the NFC South. If they were in the NFC North or the NFC West, I don't think I'd be sitting here talking about the Saints. But because of the teams that they're trying to beat out in their own division, I think getting to 8 or 9 wins is a lot more realistic.
Yeah, I mean, last year, what was a 3-way tie atop the division at 8-9, and the Panthers won the tiebreaker. This year, we might be looking at the same. The fourth shot in the division is the Falcons, and they're plus 400. I mean, just think about that. The long shot in the NFC South is plus $4, and you have some ridiculous prices of other long shots, like Arizona, 100-1 in the NFC West, the Raiders, 20-1 for the AFC West, Dolphins, 40-1 in the AFC East. I get even a comparison like the Vikings are a little over 5-1 in the NFC North, and another division that's expected to be competitive, the Giants 6-1 in the NFC East. And here's the long shot for the NFC North at 4 or the NFC South with the Falcons at 4-1. So you mentioned Kellen Moore, as did I. You like his coach of the year odds. You think there's a pulse here? Because I mean, we've seen different profiles, like the Heisman Trophy. We know the profile quarterback of like the number one team, or you just get a guy who's got gaudy stats like Lamar Jackson or RG3. And then there's the outlier, which could be like a two-way player or something like that. The profile of coach of the year, it's different. It could be the number one seed when Harbaugh won it for the Ravens. You get a guy who really surpasses expectations, sneaks in the playoffs as a wild card team. Is that sort of the Kellen Moore approach you're going for at 12-1?
Yeah, I would say Kellen Moore is probably more of the quote unquote traditional type of winner, where it's, you know, a non-playoff team a year ago, maybe a team that won 5, 6, 7 games, and then they jump up to a playoff team, a wild card team, 9 or 10 wins. You know, a winning record is usually the bar that you have to clear here. It's very, very difficult, if not unprecedented, to win coach of the year of like a 7-10 team. So that does whittle the field down for me. And, you know, we talked about Dan Campbell at 25-1. He's one of my favorite values. I think Kellen Moore at 12-1, still a pretty reasonable value. Again, I like the path to getting to 8 or 9 wins. If you're the Saints, that division is winnable, even if I think it's most likely that Tampa Bay brings it home. And then the two other guys I would look at, Doug, would be Brian Schottenheimer, 15-1 with the Dallas Cowboys. That probably requires Dallas to win the NFC East. It's possible. I do like this Philly team. I think the AJ Brown thing could be addition by subtraction, but Dallas to me pretty clearly number two in that division. I'm very skeptical of the Giants and the Commanders. I like a lot of the improvements that they made to that defense. Still need to see it in practice, of course, but you have a top five offense coming back from last season. And then the other guy is Kevin O'Connell, believe it or not, adding to my Minnesota Vikings portfolio, 20-1, you know, and it's kind of the same thing we talked about with Kyler Murray improving this team. If the Vikings make the playoffs, I think he gets a lot of the credit for Kyler Murray likely playing well enough for that to happen. And I think you could reasonably say, well, he did win it just a couple of years ago, but just in the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen both Mike Vrabel and Kevin Stefanski win this award twice. So I don't think that's really a disqualifier when it comes to KOC.
All right. So it's a great point about Schottenheimer, 15-1 versus what, +210 for Dallas to win the NFC East. Now, obviously they can win the division and he cannot win coach of the year, but it is sort of a boost, and it's very important in all these kind of markets. One market might adjust, like there might be an injury on Philly's defensive front, and that shades the Cowboys' mm-hmm. number to win the division, and they leave Schottenheimer market out there exposed. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, do you do same units? Because really what you do is if you have four guys to win coach of the year, obviously multiple guys can't win, so you're really creating your own prop, like your own index bet, but obviously the payout's a little different. So if you do four guys at 20-1, then you're really just creating your own prop. It's like a derivative trading on Wall Street. You're creating your own contract, so to speak.
More or less. I mean, I think you're much more of a math guy than me, Doug. You know, I'm more so just jotting down like, hey, I think this guy could win it. I think this is a pretty reasonable price. So I will happily admit I'm not coming up with any derivative formulas here. But yeah, when you're looking at all guys who are at least 12-1, I mean, Kellen Moore is the shortest shot that I would be willing to bet right now. Yeah, you can open it up. You can feel comfortable, I think, betting multiple of these award winners at longer prices, right? I wouldn't be doing the same if these guys were all +150 or 3-1.
Right. You can't bet the, two chalk guys or something like that. All right, Nick, really good stuff as always. We appreciate it. It was fun to chop it up, and I'll see you back out here in Las Vegas when you're here for a Circa, contest weekend.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me and looking forward to hanging out in a couple weeks.
All right. Likewise. That is Nick Whalen joining us via the Progressive guest line. You can catch him during the week, Monday through Friday, on Prop Points here on VSiN. And also, he is a senior analyst over at RotoWire. I mentioned we're going to break down Monday's card even further with some pitcher props. That's about 15, 20 minutes away. I'm also going to tell you why I love a certain team minus the points in the WNBA on Monday, but why there's only three teams that I think can legitimately win the WNBA championship. So I'm going to shed some light on that and why there's value still on Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. That's straight ahead here on Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Halfway through Cashing Out, I am Doug Kazarian here in downtown Las Vegas at the lovely Circa Resort and Casino. Dustin back in the hot seat starting tomorrow, the rest of the week. So we've had some really good chats and some nice, I think, some interesting picks and analysis for the upcoming NFL season. We're going to revisit Monday's baseball card in 15 minutes, specifically some pitcher props, maybe some hitter props as well. So I'm looking forward to that as Logan Windsor is going to join us in about 15 minutes, as I said. And I want to remind everyone, just most people think sports betting is about picking winners. Ungambled is built on a different idea, matched betting and arbitrage. It's a tool that teaches you how to use sportsbook bonuses and promotional offers to capture value, whether or not your side covers. And Ungambled backs it up. If you don't turn a profit on your bankroll in 8 weeks, they refund your membership. To learn more, start with the free guide at ungambled.com/VSiN. That's ungambled.com/VSiN and use promo code VSiN for 10% off. Bet sharp, look square. I think that's a funny tagline as well. And if you missed any of the analysis we had, whether it be Nick Whalen or Mick earlier, all the picks are on VSiN.com, the picks page. Go check it out. A lot of information, a lot of articles as well, and the betting guides are fantastic. So you want to just get caught up on the season. If you're not making a wager on the upcoming season, then I think it's great just to get caught, especially with college football, the coaching moves, the player moves in the portal, just getting a nice little kind of reset and getting ready for the upcoming season. But both the NFL Guide and the College Football Guide are pretty strong, and there obviously a lot of work went into those, so I encourage everyone to check it out. All right, so I'm going to talk NFL in a sec, but I really want to just touch on the WNBA. Not that it's a huge betting handle, but it is the fastest growing. Mike Palm talks about it here on VSiN. Right now, based on the odds, I would say that the betting market and the odds makers think there are six teams that could win the WNBA championship. Obviously, you have a favorite, even money, with the Minnesota Lynx, who have the number one seed, won again yesterday at Vegas and beat the two-time defending champion Aces. And they're going to likely end up with the one seed come playoff time. And then the Aces are right there behind it at plus 450. And then there's a drop-off, but really the odds say six teams. I only think three. I think the Aces and the Lynx are obviously championship contenders. And I think the third team is Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever. I watch almost every game. I don't understand, especially when you factor in liability. Remember, Tiger Woods would be an overwhelming favorite and his odds would always be so short because everyone would bet him. Caitlin Clark got ridiculous volume for the MVP coming in the season. I thought the Fever did too. They should be the third favorite in my eyes. They just went to Atlanta and pulled out a comeback win and won in overtime. And the Dream have shorter odds at plus 850. I don't think people realize how good Caitlin Clark is. I know she's a fan favorite, and people all know that, and that she moves the needle, but she's awesome, okay? She is better than Paige Beckers and Olivia Miles. Now, their team's not better than Minnesota, but in these tight series, now, I know their defense is weak, but I think they got a puncher's chance because it's getting better, and it's kind of like those 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns teams that didn't have to, yes, they gave up a lot of points, but they were out middle of the pack defensive efficiency. I think that's what we have with Indiana, and I think Clark, you know, she's getting picked up full court. There's always this intensity guarding her at the beginning of the season. All these teams are ready to go at the Fever because they have a bullseye on their back. There's some jealousy with all the commercials that she and others have. I think when teams are shorthanded, it's a long season. That's why she shined the second half of her rookie year, and that's why she ended up being, I think, fourth in the MVP voting, but definitely WNBA first team. And this year, she's playing a lot better now that she's healthy, and the season is going on. These teams don't have the energy mentally or physically to just be a giant thorn in her side. So I think she's finally getting her 20-10 games. She's got a really strong supporting cast, and Aaliyah Boston is a former number one overall pick herself. And also Kelsey Mitchell is getting even MVP buzz. I don't think she's there, but she's been awesome. So it doesn't really, I don't care if she's an MVP candidate or not, but she's been great. She offers another dimension. Her and Clark play really well together. I still think plus 950 or 10-1 is a worthwhile sprinkle because I don't believe in the Valkyries to win it all at 8-1. I can see the upside, but I just don't think they're going to beat teams 3 out of 5 and then 4 out of 7 in the finals if they get there. And I don't believe in the Dream either. I think they're too limited at the point guard position with Jordan Canada. But I'm not thrilled with their coach. I think they blow a lot of games. So I think it's Lynx and Aces for obvious reasons. Lynx are the best team this year. Aces are the two-time defending champs. They have Asia Wilson, the best player. And they'll be there come playoff time. They're going to be a tough out regardless of what happens in the regular season. And then I think the Fever are a fun long shot bet. I bet them only a couple weeks ago at 18-1. So they've been lurking, and they tweaked their starting lineup. They have Timpson now. Their power forward is super athletic. I mean, maybe the most athletic player in the league. And she just adds another dimension as a role player. So I think they've been – and I think it's Caitlin Clark leading the way. So take it for what it is, for what it's worth. That's how I'm seeing the rest of the WNBA season. But remember, they're going to take a three-week break or so, kind of like hockey did – for the NHL did during the Olympics. There's going to be a FIBA World Championship, so there's going to be about 3 weeks off in September for the league. So only a couple more weeks and then a break, and then they resume the regular season and then the playoffs. So I mentioned NFL. Somewhat big news, depending on your appetite and your opinion of Von Miller, but he agreed to a contract with the Dallas Cowboys. That's according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. 1-year deal for Von Miller in Dallas, and we obviously know a year ago they traded Micah Parsons, and Dallas's defense was not good, not great, Bob. And they, you know, went and got Quinnen Williams for the Jets at the trade deadline, trying to springboard it into this season. And the question is, will Von Miller actually do anything for this team? He was with Washington. Before that, he was with Buffalo. Then obviously he was a Super Bowl MVP when more of his prime when he was with the Denver Broncos. Skip Bayless, who somehow is relevant for all those years at First Take and everything, but he does know the Cowboys. That's his team, things like that. He said, yes, sir, good move for the Cowboys to sign Von Miller. He's 37, but had 9 sacks for Washington, and he's from DeSoto A&M. He went to A&M, obviously, and will provide championship wisdom and stature. We had him on Gridiron at the Super Bowl. Fun to be around. Welcome home, Vaughn. So there is something to be said about the locker room. Like, obviously, Brady, when he went to Tampa, was awesome as a quarterback. Really impressive during that playoff run. But that Bucs culture, they didn't know how to win. Like, he was literally the first guy in the locker room at the training facility and last guy to leave. Like, he taught them how to win. Now, I'm not saying Von Miller is Tom Brady or will have that kind of an impact like a quarterback does, but I will say you have to have certain dudes in your locker room that can demonstrate how to win, especially if the Cowboys are trying to get over the hump, especially defensively. That's a mindset that needs to be instilled. I remember working when I was working at ESPN, Flip Saunders told me this because it was really important. When they drafted a guy, just tanking is not the best thing. You should have a veteran there to teach these, you know, top picks just how to be a professional. So when they drafted, you know, Wiggins and things like that, they were trying to teach that Garnett on the roster to teach some of these young guys, just making sure if it's Wiggins or Towns. But either way, you should have that adult in the locker room. So maybe Von Miller does that for the defense. Is he going to be this, all of a sudden, this dominant force? Of course not. He's 37. But I do think sometimes you need that wrinkle because you just can't have one voice like the head coach. You have to have certain guys who can demonstrate or at least instill a mindset that command respect. Coaches command respect for their position, but players, fellow players who've been there, done that, obviously instill a different kind of respect or command a different kind of respect, I should say. And I think that could have an impact. So we'll see if this pans out. Probably a low-risk signing for the Cowboys. It's just something to keep in mind. But this defense needs to get better. It doesn't need to be, as our guest last night on Saturday night said, the 85 Bears. But it needs to be competent. So if the offense, remember the opening night a year ago, they were right there with the Eagles, who were the defending champs, raised the banner. And they were right there in the second half. I think it was like tied or they took the lead end of the third quarter. And then the Eagles made the plays. But man, they were right there in a lot of games. So the Cowboys have the goods at full strength with both receivers, obviously Pickens and CeeDee Lamb, and then Dak, and that offense like should be good. I'm a fan of Schottenheimer. He's more than just competent. So maybe that is part of the glue, I guess, is a way to put it, with how this defense can respond, all things considered, and at least just be serviceable on that side of the ball. Week 0 of college football is almost here, and with the NFL regular season right behind it, now's the time to get your edge with VSiN Pro. Join VSiN Pro today and get instant access to both our college football and NFL betting guides packed with team previews, power ratings, proven betting systems, and best bets from VSiN's top analysts. And that's just the start. You'll also get daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools, and matchup analysis, plus 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. So a lot of good stuff. And I mentioned it a moment ago. It is insane the depth and effort that went into it. Again, even if you don't place a single bet, I think people should check out. It's a great preview magazine for both college and pro football. It's good to have opinions, and you just have the lay of the land, too. Just like who went where, NFL and college. Obviously, college has much more movements, but so does the NFL. It's not just John Harbaugh, who's now the head coach with the Giants. There's a lot of other coaching turnover. Mike McDaniel going from Miami to now be the play caller at the Chargers. I think a lot of interesting developments, and you'll hear different opinions as well, or read different opinions, I should say. All right. This is Cashing Out. We're moving along. I am Doug Kazarian. Dustin will be back in the hot seat tomorrow, and straight ahead, we're talking baseball props for the Monday card. We have a handicapper standing by. This is Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Rolling along here on Cashing Out, I'm Doug Kazarian here live in downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino, flying solo. Dustin back in the hot seat tomorrow and throughout the rest of the week. So a lot of action on Sunday. We covered most of it, but these pennant races are certainly heating up. Obviously, there's about 35 games left for each team, give or take a couple. And it's crazy how tight not only the some of these division races are, but the American League wild card is absolutely jam-packed. And that's what Major League Baseball had in mind when they changed the playoff format, added an extra wild card to make these teams be more, not even necessarily buyers, but just not sellers at the deadline. And we have some crazy records with teams with those records somehow still in the playoff races. But how does that affect Monday's card? Well, let's discuss that. For more, let's bring in Logan Windsor, handicapper out of Wisconsin, Milwaukee area. Know him on Twitter as WizBets, as Logan joins us via the Progressive guest line. Logan, good to be with you. Even though your Brewers took 3 out of 4 of my Dodgers, we're still going to get along pleasantly.
Yeah, today was huge because now we have the tiebreaker going to the playoffs. So if their records are the same, home field to Milwaukee. But this is the best part of the MLB season because we finally know teams' identities coming out of the trade deadline. So we have a good idea on who to attack, at least for the next few weeks.
It's a great point. That's a really good point because a lot of times I've heard over the years that the sharpest baseball bettors take the second half of the season off because the market's already adjusted, the softness, it's hardened. And then they focus on the NFL and college football upcoming seasons. I disagree. I think there's opportunities everywhere. I loved the Padres today. I thought Casey Mize settled down, faced a new Cleveland. That was my biggest like straight wager of the Sunday card in terms of baseball. I had some live bet as well. But I want to talk about some pitcher props because I know you focus a lot on those and not everyone does. And I know you have some value here. Let's start with the aforementioned Dodgers, who have just been spiraling. Like I said, lost 3 of 4 to Milwaukee. That was after getting swept by the Cubs, swept by the Red Sox. The offense isn't there. The pitching's been shaky at times. Some guys have been okay, but it really the offense has been their Achilles of late. Maybe Colorado Coors Field is the slump buster that lineup needs as the Dodgers go to Denver. Sagano's on the bump for Rockies. Actually, he's their ace, or actually Freeland of late, but for most of the year, it's been Sagano. But Blake Snell was one outing since returning from injury. He's going for his second outing. Heavy favorite, minus 240, give or take, are the Dodgers. And you have a pitcher prop for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting the Dodgers to bounce back after that brutal series versus Milwaukee. But I don't love the run lines or anything. But Blake Snell, coming off the IL, I was very hesitant to take anything pro-Snell for a while. And then he completely surprised me against the Royals a couple days ago. Crushed his K line, approached 10. His pitch count was great as well coming off the IL. I think he got up to like 85 pitches in that game. And I tried to figure out what was the difference for Blake Snell. As a Dodgers fan, you know, since the Dalton rushing injury, your catching situation has been just brutal. Fiducia, Alfonso, I think even Chucky Robinson got some games in there, just trying to find anybody that can catch. And I was expecting Blake Snell coming off the IL to really struggle with these young catchers. Then they got Ben Rodvert from the Mets. And he caught for you guys last year and actually caught 3 games for Blake Snell in 19 innings. Snell only gave up 1 run with Ben. He caught that game against the Royals, and I'm expecting him to catch every single game when he gets the opportunity to face a right-handed pitcher like Sugano, because he does bat lefty. So if that's the case, Blake Snell, 6.5 strikeouts just feels too low in Coors.
Yeah, he
got 10-plus strikeouts versus... Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to let you and I know this, but some of our audience... Yeah, so the Dodgers, Will Smith's been out. He may not return until the postseason, if he does. But Dalton Rushing, the young catcher, he jacked up, I think, his UCL or something like that. So there's been a hodgepodge of catchers. And it's just sort of, obviously, the bat has not been the same in the lineup without Will Smith, or rushing for that matter. So, but to your point, it's the command and the everything, just calling the pitches, and that's having a domino effect. So I just wanted to, like, bring people up to speed in terms of why the Dodgers have this catching concern.
Yeah, I mean, what people don't know now with ABS as well, catchers control everything for pitchers. The pitching, location, pitch type, etc., and just the feel of the game. And when you bring somebody off the IL, the last thing you want is one of those hodgepodge catchers catching for you. But Ben and Blake Snell have a good connection. In that game against the Royals, Snell got 15 whiffs, which I totally was not expecting. And his last time in Colorado, a place where some pitchers that feature curveballs really, really struggle, Blake Snell dominated in 7 innings, giving up just 1 earned run, but 12 strikeouts. This Rockies team is susceptible to strikeouts versus lefties more to right. I know they're hitting the ball well as of late. But handing a 6.5 K line for Snell, if he's going to have a full leash, feel like this is a must win for the Dodgers. I like Snell at 6.5.
Yeah, he hit 10, as you mentioned, against the Royals, only 84 pitches, so it's not like he went 100 pitches or something. I'll say this, Coors Field can sometimes mess with pitchers mentally as much as physically with some of the spin rate, things like that. Now, he last pitched at Coors in 2023. For what it's worth, he had 10 strikeouts and 7 hitless and shutout innings. So I guess his stuff wasn't affected by the altitude back when he was pitching for the Padres. Any concern on that front here with this pitching, with this prop of 6.5?
Oh, always in Colorado. I have a system where I generally fade pitchers who feature curveballs, changeups, sweepers, stuff that breaks vertically, because your spin rate goes down and your break goes down to a point where you're expecting to get it below the zone, but you hit it either middle or inside the zone, and pitchers really struggle. Snell actually really struggled in Colorado for years. He gave up 7 runs, 5 runs, and 4 runs back in 21 and 22. But he featured his curveball less in that 23 matchup. And the more a pitcher pitches in Coors, it helps them a ton in their career. Obviously, Snell was with the Padres, so he faced the Rockies twice a year in Coors. I know it's been a few years, but I still like Snell in the altitude. If it was like a 7.5 or an 8.5 line, then I'd be scared off a little bit. But to hang the same line that he got last week against the Royals, I think there's probably value still.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm with you on that front. There's another pitcher prop, this one involving an interleague game, Tigers and Pirates. I'm on the over 8. It's Framber Valdez goes for Detroit, and Wlodzinski, who's been really rocked lately, goes for the Bucks. Now, Detroit coming off the home sweep to the White Sox, so they're chasing the AL Central, so maybe a little bit dejected here. I still like over 8. I think that's just too low of a number. But you like Valdez, pitcher prop.
Yeah, there's two interleague games I actually like the over on. We'll talk about another one maybe in a second. But the Tigers and the Pirates, I'm totally okay with. Pirates bullpen is very shaky at best. Moldonski will give up a ton of runs. And Valdez could still give up some runs here. My issue is always lefties versus the Pirates. They're among one of the worst teams versus lefties in baseball. The highest whiff percentage, one of the lowest expected batting averages. They don't get any homers, which is what Valdez gets crushed by sometimes. And the most important thing for me is that they just don't walk. 8.3 walk percentage for them. They're one guy that was walking a lot. The rookie Valdez is in a huge slump right now, and they need innings out of Valdez. All three of their starters got crushed versus the White Sox. I would say Anderson was the best off, but because he is coming from the bullpen to the starting rotation, his start was limited. So I expect Valdez to go 90 plus pitches regardless of what happens. And he has hated pitching in Detroit this season. His K stuff has been significantly down from what it was in previous years. But with this game being in PNC Park, he's cashing his 4.5 Ks line in the majority of games he pitches on the road, about 75%. And he has ladder upside all the way up to 7 if he is going to go 100 plus pitches here. So AJ Hinch, he doesn't usually have a big leash for these types of pitchers. Framber has been the exception. He will let him die out there. So regardless of how many runs he gives up, I think he'll eventually at least get 5 Ks.
All right, so 102 pitches in his last start. Now on the road, he's get his last two starts this month. He's been 5 strikeouts, 6 strikeouts. But then in July, 1-1. But one of those was when he just got shelled at Wrigley. He didn't get out of the first inning, and there's a lot of memes out there. He had a yes hitter against the Cubs because he just got shelled. I remembered it like he didn't get an out, but he did. He got 2/3 of an inning, and they got blown out from the start, 11-2 loss. I'm glad you like the over in that Pirates. Yeah, the bullpen has been pretty shaky, to say the least. I think Valdez, I'm interested to see how this Tigers offense, I think they have to show up, but they're definitely demoralized. They were hoping to gain some ground with the division-leading White Sox. That did not happen and went the other direction as the Southsiders swept the Tigers in Detroit. There's another big series with the Rays, who are leading the AL East. They have a wraparound series, so they play game 4 with the O's tomorrow. It's not the day game. We do have one morning/day game, but there is a wraparound series, so that's always is interesting. McClanahan returns from injury for Tampa, I should say, and then the Orioles are going to counter with Brandon Young, but the O's have taken the first 3 of this series, so that's certainly surprising. I'm going to pick your brain, Logan, on that as we roll on here on Cashing Out. I am Doug Kazarian. He is Logan Windsor. We're talking about the Monday betting card here on Cashing Out. And I talked about my favorite total. I have a favorite side, and we are aligned on one National League team at even money. So we're aligned on that one. He will break down his props, and I'm going to tell you about my favorite money line tomorrow as we roll on here on Cashing Out.